Blog Talk Radio.
At 12 o'clock, it's Talking Sports with Mike T. I am your host, Mike Tramatozzi, with you here for the next hour or so, maybe half hour, depending on how we've got, obviously, here in the Northeast, still trying to get everything back to normal after Hurricane Sandy that came through. And, you know, depending on how we've got everything going here, depends on how long the show will be today. But, you know, let's start in the NBA. Obviously, we never really got a chance to go through some NBA stuff last week. We were not on the air. So we didn't really get to go over any type of NBA really preview or anything. So we're going to take this time to kind of go through the NBA and, you know, the first couple games of the year. In this area, if you're a Knicks fan, you really couldn't have started any better. 2-0, giving up 84 points a game in both games, scoring over 100 points. They came into the year saying if they can hold people under 25 points a quarter or under 100 points, that they would be a dominant team in the Eastern Conference. And I tend to agree with that. And so far, they've played great defense. You know, taking a lot of threes, but hitting a lot of threes as well. You know, they shot 52% from three against the Heat on Friday night, and they shot well yesterday against Philadelphia, a team that they beat 100-84 2 days after beating the Heat 104-84. So, you know, this is a good start for the Knicks. It's their first 2-0 start since 1999, which shows you where the team was, or the organization was, for the most part, the last couple of most of the last decade, that this is their first 2-0 start since 99, a year that they went to the finals and lost to the Spurs. But you have to like how they're moving the ball. Jason Kidd has played fantastic. J.R. Smith, a game after having 6 assists, leads the team with 9 rebounds, scores 20 points. Carmelo Anthony, a little volume-ish shooting-wise, taking 28 shots to get 30 points. Yesterday, 27 points on 18 shots, which is a lot more economical, and that's something that I think you can build upon. If you look at the rest of this team, Raymond Felton, double figures, scoring both games. Kurt Thomas has given you some really big play in sporadic minutes. Steve Novak has been lights out from downtown, as you would expect. And I think Ronnie Brewer has given them some very good minutes defensively, and he's, you know, getting you 7 to 10 points in the first two games. I think he had 9 or 7 on opening day, and he had 9 yesterday, I want to say, against the Sixers. Brewer had 9 points, 5 rebounds. He was a plus 12 offensively on the court. That's good. That's something that you want to see from Ronnie Brewer. You know, he's not going to be a 15 to 20 point scorer, although, you know, he can score the basket, as he showed in Arkansas. He can score if he has to. But you look at the way this team's played. 24 minutes for Novak, 6 points, 2 of 5 from downtown after hitting 5 against the Heat. But, you know, they didn't need it. He did play, you know, some good defense, but he's more of a guy that's going to stand out along the three-point line. He did try and develop a pump fake and step dribble and, you know, reload, which can kind of allow him to get open more. You know, last year it was more of he had to catch the ball on the fly. Now he's able to maybe create a little bit more on his own. Obviously still limited in terms of what he can do offensively, but still is a lights-out shooter. And Jason Kidd, 12 points, 6 assists, 3 rebounds, pretty much doubling his minutes, or doubling what he did in the first game. Felton, 11 points, only 1 assist, but he had 2 rebounds and a steal. Didn't play great distributing the ball, but hey, you know, they still had 18 assists on 39 baskets, which is, you know, wasn't great. There was a little bit more of some stagnation, if you want to call it, or one-on-one. You did get six assists from Kidd, and then the next closest was Prigioni with four. But, yeah, listen, you take wins any way you can get them, kind of like in the NBA. You don't complain. You don't complain with your losses, with your wins. You don't say, oh, this wasn't a good game. We were lucky to win. Hey, you take wins any way you can get them, and the same goes in the NBA. I've said all along that I think the Knicks can be a team that's a top three team in the Eastern Conference. I think a lot of people, you know, disrespect is a big word, but they kind of did, in a way, disrespect and underutilize the team, how it could be in terms of how they play as a whole. You know, oh, they're old, they're this, but, you know, the people that are old are not really guys that they're expecting to play 30 minutes. You know, Kidd played 25 minutes, and that's a good number for him. I think any time over 30, you can run the risk of wearing him down. That's why you've got Prigioni, you've got Raymond Felton, you know, you've got J.R. Smith, and you've got Shumpert when he comes back. That can kind of give Mike Woodson a lot of options in terms of their guard rotation. So I actually think that the way that they've played is really good early on to kind of get yourself into a rhythm. You know, you don't want to be one of these, you know, 7-9 teams and you got to get going. Get yourself into a rhythm early on. Get yourself, you know, 3 wins in 4. Get yourself, you know, 6-2 or something. Give yourself the ability to get yourself on a roll early on. And then I think you can see this team kind of gel into a team that I think can win 50 games. You know, I don't think there's any way you can tell me, looking at the roster and how they're playing and how they play off each other, that you can't tell me that they're not a 50-win team. Because, like I said, when they get Stoudemire back, that kind of alleviates more pressure, allows Carmelo to go to a small forward, kind of allows Kidd to kind of play the backup role. You can put Brewer back at shooting guard and Felton at the point, and it kind of gives you a little more traditional look. Right now they're going small because they don't have Stoudemire. Also, it kind of, you know, Kurt Thomas played 18 minutes. You maybe want to scale that back a bit. Obviously, you're going to get Camby back in the next couple days. That'll alleviate some of that. Obviously, also some of the weight on Chandler, who's battling the flu. You know, on Friday he was in foul trouble, so Camby coming back will alleviate some of that. So I don't see why this team can't win 50 games. I don't know why they can't win 53 games and be a 2 seed. You know, this idea that the Celtics are going to run away with the division is not. I don't understand it, so I reserve judgment on that. I think the Celtics are a good team, but I think both of these teams can win 45 to 50 games, but I think the Celtics' ceiling is closer to 45 than the Knicks are, because I just don't like the depth the Celtics have at the guard spot. You know, they spent this whole offseason retooling it. Obviously, they'll be a little bit better once they get Avery Bradley back. But they're giving up a lot of points to start, which is something that Boston doesn't usually do. You know, they beat the Wizards by 3. They play again on Wednesday in kind of a home-and-home thing. That kind of like what the Knicks are doing with Philadelphia, who they'll play tonight, looking to get to 3-0. But, you know, you rely on Rondo so much in Boston that you tend to realize that, you know, Jason Terry kind of had a step back last year. Courtney Lee is a good player, but he's never really been as, you know, where people think he's, you know, a better guard, I think, than he actually is. You know, and then you throw in, you know, guys like Jared Sullinger, who I think can play pretty well for this team. You know, Brandon Bass is averaging 10 a game. That's a good role player, secondary player. Signing Barbosa was a good move because I think it gives you some point guard depth and kind of gives you some flexibility as well if you're Doc Rivers. But outside of that, I mean, you know, Jeff Green's obviously a big, big guy that's coming back. Obviously, they traded Kendrick Perkins for him. He's a guy that can give you some flexibility as well, playing the two, the three, even the four if you want to go big or small, depending on what your lineup is. I mean, you can put him at the two and have Pierce at the three and, you know, kind of make your team kind of bigger because he has that ability to play those guard positions. But I just don't – outside of Green, I don't see them being a good bench again. I just don't see it. I don't like Courtney Lee. I don't think Jason Terry's got a lot left in the tank. So, I mean, if you can get Jeff Green to kind of be the guy he was in Oklahoma City and kind of be that, you know, 12, 15-point-per-game guy with, you know, 7 rebounds and 4 assists and kind of allow you to kind of play Paul Pierce a little bit less, then, you know, you'll be looking at a guy that can really give them some oomph. But you look at it in the Eastern Conference, you've got Indiana who's missing Granger, and that kind of throws a kink into their early season plans. You've got Miami, you've got Orlando, who's surprisingly 2-0, but I wouldn't expect it to last, you know, scoring 109 points a game and only giving up 92. That's not something that you expect Orlando to do. I mean, Glenn Davis is averaging 26 points a game. That is not going to last. I don't care what he does. Glenn Davis is not going to average 25 a game for your team. And I don't think J.J. Redick's going to score 24 off the bench. I mean, this is some funny stats in Orlando early on, but, you know, I don't see them making the playoffs. You know, I don't really like what they did in terms of the trade for Dwight Howard. You know, when you don't really get anything of back, kind of really doesn't make the trade give a lot of sense to it. But, I mean, if you had to look at the Eastern Conference, you know, it's kind of tough, right, because teams have already started playing. But when you look at the Eastern Conference, obviously, you know, it comes down to New York, Philly, Boston, and Brooklyn in the Atlantic. You know, can Chicago kind of weather everything and kind of keep themselves above float until Derrick Rose comes back? It's possible. But this might, you know, they may be a sixth seed or so going in, because I think Milwaukee's a good team. I think they get a full year out of Monte Ellis, Scott Skouts can kind of figure out how to play him and where to play him. Like I said, I don't think there's really many teams out of the Southeast that are going to get into the playoffs. You know, you may have Atlanta and Orlando fighting for that eighth spot. You know, Washington was a trendy pick before John Wall got hurt. It'll be interesting to see how they can play, if they can kind of keep their heads above water until John Wall gets back. Kind of like Minnesota. Can Minnesota keep their heads up? You know, they lose J.J. Barea last night. So that kind of throws a wrench into their plans, because they're playing without Kevin Love and they're playing without Ricky Rubio. So that's a team a lot of people thought was a sleeper pick to not only make the playoffs, but to be a mid-seeded team, a 6 seed or a 5 seed, because, you know, they have a lot of talent. But when you lose your two best players, very, very tough to go, especially in the Western Conference, that, you know, sitting there historically as the better conference of the two. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Minnesota can do. Obviously, Oklahoma City decides to put TNT into the normal projections of the Western Conference by trading James Harden to the Rockets, who's only gone off for 100 points in 3 games. So as of right now, you think Houston's got the better end of the deal. They signed him for 5 years. He's right now, through 3 games, you can't flourish any better as a number one than as James Harden is. I mean, you look at his numbers, he's averaging 35 a game. You know, Jeremy Lin's giving you 7 assists. But it'll be interesting to see how Houston can move. They were very close last year to being a playoff team, and now they finally have that guy who can be your go-to guy be your number one scoring option and a guy that you can, you know, throw your offense around. And he's only going to get better as he gets more comfortable with his surroundings and with his teammates and whatnot. Golden State has started the year 2-1. They're another team, if they can keep Andrew Bogut healthy, they're a team that can maybe challenge for a 7 or 8 seed. Clippers, 2-1. Really, you know, lackluster effort the other night against Golden State. And they suffered their first loss of the season. I like the Clippers a lot. You know, it'll be funny to see how the Lakers can kind of keep going and whether or not the Clippers can kind of steal some momentum and steal some people out of L.A. in the Western Conference. You know, I don't think, you know, the Lakers are 1-3. All these talk, you know, it's the same like the Heat 2 years ago. Everyone's like, oh, they're going to win, you know, they're going to win 100 games. They're going to do this. You know, they're going to not even be close. Watch out for the Lakers, you know, the 71 Lakers and their 33-game winning streak and, you know, the 98 Bulls with their 97 Bulls with their 72 wins. You know, it's just crazy talk. They did it with the Heat. The Heat didn't even come close to 72 wins. The Lakers aren't going to come close to 72 wins because right now they've already lost 3 games, which means for the rest of the year, they're going to have to go 71-8. Or 71-7. So why? Why even bother telling me these things? Because you know it's not true. You know it's not going to happen. So, you know, let's all just calm down. The Lakers are a 55-win team, I think. 50-55. You know, right now, unless they get hot, it's probably going to be closer to 50. So, but that's not bad. That's a good season if you win 50 games. You know, you have teams like Portland that are saying, hey, if we can get, with our young talent, you know, the way Damian Lillard's playing, who's putting up ridiculous numbers to start the year. LaMarcus Aldridge is putting up insane numbers. Batum, you know, that's a team that can win 40 to 45 games and kind of get themselves going. So, I don't, you know, to me, I think, you know, I think Oklahoma City right now at 1-2 is kind of trying to retrofit everything and kind of fit themselves back into how they can play, because I'm not surprised if it comes out that the Harden trade kept them and kind of took them by surprise, especially so close to the start of the season that it kind of threw them for a loop. That wouldn't surprise me. I think the most fun subplot of the year is whether or not Mike Brown's going to last. A lot of people says he's not going to last the next week if the Lakers keep playing like this, because that's a lot of money the Lakers have invested in this team, and it's not really a young team. You know, everyone makes talk of the Knicks' age, but outside of Dwight Howard, you know, who's still in his prime, in his 20s, you know, just 26 years old, and he's had a good start to the year, 23-10. You know, obviously Kobe's in getting up there, and Kobe's already talked about how he's not going to play another, you know, 2 years. Once his contract's up, he'll be done. You know, 16 years in the league, he's 34. You know, he's not a young pup anymore. Obviously, Pau Gasol, a little bit younger, but he's 32. Obviously, Steve Nash is pushing 40. You know, their bench is made up of a who's who of, you know, nothing. I mean, ooh, we've got Jordan Hill. We've got Antoine Jameson. So what? Who cares? If you're telling me your bench is sitting there with Darius Morris, Steve Blake, Jordan Hill, Antoine Jameson, Devin Ebanks, Jody Meeks, I mean, that's terrible. That's garbage, really. You know, yeah, everybody wants to make fun of the Knicks get with Camby and Kidd and Rasheed Wallace. Antoine Jameson's just as old, and he's not as good. I mean, this idea that Antoine Jameson's going to go back to being the guy off the bench he was for Dallas 10 years ago is not going to happen. You know, can you get any less out of Meta World Peace 10 points and 4 rebounds a game. You know, he's shooting 44% from the field, but he shot 63% the other night in their win. He had 18 points. So what are we supposed to look at? You know, he shot 80% and 63%. They lost both one of those games and beat the Pistons last night. Other than that, he shot 12% against Dallas. He shot 3 for 10 against the Clippers. I don't think, I mean, this is a guy that obviously just does whatever he wants. You know, he's shooting 1 of 5 from downtown a game. That's clearly not what they want him to do. So I'm not sure what this Lakers team is going to be. Obviously, it's going to go as far as Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard take it. I think you're going to see some more out of Steve Nash when he comes back. You know, he only scored averaging 5 points and, you know, 4 assists a game. So obviously, you've got to get something better out of that when he comes back. But I still think Oklahoma City's the team to beat. I think the Jazz are going to be a good test for the Lakers because they can play down low. You know, they've got basically a glut of big men. They've got Cantor, they've got Al Jefferson, they've got Favors, Millsap's still there. I mean, that's a very deep team with no guard play. You know, you're relying on Mo Williams to be your point guard as well as Randy Foy. You know, Mo Williams leading the team in scoring at 22 a game, but it'll be interesting how they go because they made the 8th seed last year, kind of surprised a lot of people, but with their young guys down low, Cantor and Favors, I think, are the future of that team. Maybe that makes Al Jefferson a little more expendable. It's possible. You know, it's way too early now to sit here and say, oh, this is what's going to happen in terms of the trade deadline and things like that. Let's not worry about any of that right now and just focus on the fact that Utah's got a glutton. And if they do need anybody, you know, if you're, say you're Minnesota, could you maybe swing a deal to get Al Jefferson back? Or maybe if you're Chicago and you want to get a secondary option, scoring option for Derrick Rose, kind of get you a little high-low option, Al Jefferson could be an option. But it's way, way too early right now, 3 games into the season, to sit here and try and say, oh, let's trade for Al Jefferson. No, let's just calm down. Everybody relax. So looking at this broad aspect of the NBA 2 games in, or 3 games in, depending on who you are, I think you see the potential in how the Knicks played. I thought the Nets the other night, I think, kind of rode the crowd to that victory because they really didn't play well. Toronto played terrible in the second quarter. Outside of that, I thought Toronto outplayed them in the first, third, and fourth, but the Nets made enough plays late to make their hold off and win the first game at the Barclays Center. They go and play Minnesota tonight and then play the Heat on Wednesday down at the American Airlines Arena. So it'll be interesting how they go. Everything's interesting, isn't it? Who doesn't love the NBA? I love that the NBA is back. It gives me something new to talk about. I love, love, love talking basketball. I can probably talk basketball way too much and get way too thought into it. I'm very excited in Cleveland. I think from a team that went so far down after losing LeBron James, you've got now Kyrie Irving, you've got Varejao, Deion Waiters, you took with the 4th pick in the draft, kind of as your super sub right now. And you still have Tristan Thompson, who was the number 9, or was a lottery pick last year. You know, Thompson's averaging 9 points, 7 rebounds. Right now, that's not terrible because Varejao's averaging 14 and 15. Kyrie Irving, 24, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. Deion Waiters, like I said, actually starting at shooting guard. I thought they would. I think he's better off the bench, but what are you going to do, start Booby Gibson? I don't think so. So I actually, You know, I kind of like what Byron Scott doing, putting Waiters in the starting role. I watched him last year at Syracuse. I think he's a sensational sixth man. But, you know, kind of right now with where they are, you kind of need to start him. And he's got 12 points and two assists a game. So Waiters is playing well. You know, they lost a heartbreaker the other night against Milwaukee where Brandon Jennings hit a three at the buzzer. But the way they're playing is they're an exciting team. I think Cleveland, you couldn't have asked it been any better to go from LeBron James than you look at losing LeBron James. And when you lose LeBron James, now all of a sudden the bottom just fell out of that team. So now you kind of pick the pieces back up. You've obviously got Byron Scott as your coach, who's worked really well with the young talent and in getting them to a certain point. You get the number one pick, and you get Kyrie Irving. You obviously are able to get Tristan Thompson because you made a deal and took the Clippers' number one pick, which was Kyrie Irving, and use your pick to get Tristan Thompson. So now you give yourself a little bit of a building block, your point guard, your power forward. You get Varejao back to be your center, kind of interchangeable with Tristan Thompson. Now you make your progress. You don't win a lot of games last year, but you're kind of exciting. You've got some good young talent. Now you get the number four pick in the draft, and you bring in Deion Waiters, who now you give him and Kyrie Irving, who can kind of also play both guard positions together. So it's not like one's strictly the shooting guard and one's strictly the point guard. So it gives them now two guys in the backcourt that are as a combo, probably as exciting and to see as any guard combo in the league. And then you add Thompson and you add Varejao. That's a good 4 out of 5, and they're only going to get better. Plus, what I love is how terrible Denver's playing. You know, they lose to the Heat at the buzzer, and an epic, epic game tomorrow night. 0-3 Nuggets against the 0-3 Pistons. I mean, that is exciting. But Denver is the trendy pick, especially after getting Andre Iguodala. And they, going into the year, everyone says, oh, this is the year George Karl gets his team going. But from what I know and what I've seen is that George Karl doesn't get his teams going. George Karl gets his teams to a certain point, and then it's kaput. Just go back and look at all the Seattle teams he had. You are telling me you have Sean Kemp and Gary Payton in their prime. In their prime. And he made it to one NBA Finals. One. He couldn't get past the Suns in 93. He couldn't get out of the first round in 94. You're sitting there as the number one team for most of that Western Conference time. Everyone remembers the Rockets winning the finals in 94, but they weren't the number one seed. Seattle was. So at some point, that's an indictment on George Karl to me. Because, you know, someone's got to win with that talent. And I don't know if he's going to win with this talent. Because it has all the makings of a classic George Karl team. 50 wins, great. You lose in the first round. So, you know, we're just about out of time. Obviously, I like to hear back from everybody. Hopefully, everybody enjoyed the show. I know I did. Like I said, there's nothing better than basketball. I hope everybody has a safe weekend. Hopefully everybody enjoys the week, and we'll see everybody back here next week. It's the same time. So everybody, take care.